The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful, beautiful Monday morning here at the headquarters campus of Armstrong College, Edmond, Oklahoma. So much to get to on today's program. Lots of news and, of course, lots of activities in God's work as well. Last night we had, not the final performance of Celtic Throne. That comes up on Tuesday night. But we had our biggest and most raucous crowd yet. I think 450 people in the auditorium and an estimated 1,500 people watching the event online. And the rave reviews continue to come in. This tweeted out last night, a most memorable and delightful Independence Day weekend topped off with Celtic Throne. Could not ask for anything better. And then this, what an inspiring performance from Armstrong Dance at Armstrong Auditorium. You nailed another show and knocked us out with a spectacular performance. And then it says, good night from South Africa. And one of the things that Shane Granger mentioned at the start of the program last night was just how many different nations were represented with that 1,500 number, those that were watching it online. This comment came in from the Philippines. It says, I would like to extend my family's deepest appreciation and gratitude to all the performers and crew of Celtic Throne. What a stellar performance on July 4th weekend. We watched the first live stream last week and were so amazed and awe-inspired that we just had to watch it a second time, even if it meant watching it at 3 a.m. in the morning. It's been the earliest that my two boys have had to get up, but they didn't mind it at all and were actually so eager to do it a second time. Even the boys are excited to get up in the middle of the night. It says here, we didn't know how the performers could outdo the premiere, for it was absolutely top-notch and spectacular. Yet, starting with the opening number during the second live stream from halfway across the world, we immediately felt the much higher level of energy emanating from Armstrong stage. Number after number proved to be an even higher caliber than the first show. There was visibly a higher spring in every jump, a stronger bolt of energy in every kick, greater vibrancy and gusto in every song and musical number. It says, congratulations to everyone for such a stunning performance. So those are some remarks that came in from out and about, those that were watching it online. And we also had our roving reporter on hand here at the concert to get some feedback from those who attended the live performance here at Armstrong Auditorium. Here's a montage of some of the feedback from last night.
I think it was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It's one of the best I've seen for a very, very long time. All of it.
All of it.
Absolutely all of it, yeah.
That was just excellent. That's all I can say. That was excellent.
It's a great show.
I would say shock and awe.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Awesome. I would love to see it again.
They're so talented.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
The thunder.
It was stunning. Marvelous and stirring all at the same time.
We loved it. Absolutely loved it.
This one, I like the last one with the clock and I like that one.
Amazing.
Phenomenal. Couldn't be any better.
Yeah.
Could not be better.
It's pretty amazing.
We've watched this group do this for years, and every single time it just never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah, it's like better and better, huh?
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
I love it. It's amazing.
The show is absolutely beautiful.
I just enjoy just coming to these. I'm a very musical person. I love music.
It's been really impressive. I don't often come to shows like this.
Yeah.
But it's been something to watch for sure. It's a unique experience.
Hey, you know what? I'm just impressed with how their physical condition, they're in amazing shape, the cardio and stuff. And I love the music because it's fun. Yeah. You know, it's real upbeat, happy music. And and then also, like, I really love the three guys that sang harmony. I'm not sure. Thought they were really good.
Yeah, they were.
Really, yes, and then playing the harp. I mean, really, there's lots of things that we never really get to see, you know, unique things. That's what's fun.
Sure, the choreographics were awesome. It was amazing. And just watching their feet, it's like you're amazed that they don't get tangled up and trip. Yeah. They're just so on cue, and I just thought it was great.
Great.
Absolutely phenomenal. The best dancing we have seen in a long, long time. And the singing is wonderful, and all the performers are just so full of energy. It's exciting to be here.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning. Yeah.
It was really cool. We looked up this event probably about...
Friday,
so a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And we found it online, and tickets were very reasonable. Yeah. We didn't know what to expect.
We didn't. Yes.
First time,
yeah. What do you guys think of the auditorium here, the theater?
It's gorgeous.
It's astounding.
Yeah. Really impressed. Yeah. Well, and I'm a dancer, for me, this not only does it hit home with my heart for dance, but, I mean, Ireland in particular is... my heartbeat. So especially that last one, that thunder roll and I feel like that expresses the heart and the strength of the Irish people in general, a multitude do. So I have been wanting to see something like this unfold in Oklahoma for like 10 years.
Wow.
So to see this in front of me, somebody who actually carried out that dream is kind of jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I hope that you guys keep doing this and it becomes a traveling tour.
I've never seen a boy kick that high.
It's very fun, very energetic, and visually pleasing, aesthetically pleasing.
I was quite impressed. I hadn't talked to anybody that actually seen it yet, but when I got here, lots of people around seen it multiple times, and they continue to come back. So we were actually not let down at all. Yeah. And then we'd been to the auditorium once before for something, and we know that it's a great venue for stuff like this. And then we found out that this is the biggest thing they do every year at the college, so we should probably come see it.
They were excellent. I was really impressed that not only did they have the older kids, but they had some of the smaller kids who were obviously in training but doing an amazing job. So this is just an incredible show. The musicians, to me, were incredible. You know, you focus on the dancers because they're out front and center, but the musicians were just incredible and really lent a lot to the overall show.
So just a wonderful reaction there from so many of the people that viewed it live at Armstrong Auditorium. As one of them commented there, you just, at this concert, you see things, a lot of things that you just don't normally see. You just don't see it today. It's like I keep saying, my father's made the remark that this is the program, this is the performance that this nation, the whole world, in fact, this is the performance that the world needs. At this moment, the music, by the way, the Irish music composed by, well, of course, it's all kinds of music. It's not even just Irish. There's really a running theme that takes you from the Middle East through Ireland and Scotland and England and the United States. And so much of that was composed by Brian Byrne. And he was featured, by the way, in the Daily Oklahoman. I should have brought some quotes from that article. I think it was on Friday. But it just talked in there about how pleased he was to be able to work with a group in Oklahoma, because this is where he lives now. He married an Oklahoman and has since moved to Oklahoma. He's been all over the world, of course, working in Hollywood, working in Dublin. And he was very happy and easy to work with. For us as well. One final comment here. It says, I wanted to commend a wonderful performance Sunday. My husband, mother-in-law, and I loved it. Everyone did such a wonderful job, and I found my legs wanted to jig along too. My husband especially loved the second part of the show with the patriotic songs. It was refreshing to hear in times as these, as this country falls apart. We both remember singing some of those songs in school during the early 1980s, In addition to that, I really loved Gail. Incorporating the movement of the dancers' arms to match the passage of time for the London clock was incredibly impactful for me. Also, I love the addition of the swirly ribbons for the outline of the clock. Very creative. I loved it. I loved all of it. She's mentioning there the powerful scene in the first half of the performance, Gail, in front of this towering clock, Big Ben, in the UK. And we've pulled a couple of minutes out from the production last night. Here's a clip from Gail. Pretty good sampling there from Gail. A good example of the special effects also added to the program. So many of those we had to leave out of the Branson performances just because of the limitations on that smaller facility. But at God's House at Armstrong Auditorium, we've got everything that we need to really put on a spectacular production. So we've got one more performance that's tomorrow night to kick off the summer educational program. And there's going to be quite a few teenagers in the Armstrong Auditorium tomorrow night, filled, no doubt, with energy as they see this exciting performance. When we come back, we've got lots of news to get to, including President Trump's speech from Friday night, his July 4th speech at Mount Rushmore. Of course, he's drawn a lot of criticism from the radical left, but looking at the history of the United States and what we used to put forward as something to aspire to, what we used to be proud of, this was an outstanding speech that the president gave on Friday night. We'll have some clips from that when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email feedback to the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. the United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
I think it was about a week and a half ago that I was talking about all these monuments coming down in the United States and how that I was surprised that there weren't more historians coming forward denouncing this activity. All of these thugs and hooligans on the streets pulling down not just Confederate soldiers, pulling down America's history, even the founding fathers. And it was just a couple of days after I made those remarks that Richard Palmer told me about an interview that David Starkey had. He's the UK historian. He's written something like 20 books. He's been all over the TV in the UK with documentaries, biographies, and so on. And sure enough, he courageously comes forward. He criticizes the BLM movement, pulling down all these statues and such. And this is a historian that we've leaned on at God's College. We use one of his books, The Crown and Country. That's basically a history of Great Britain. We use that in one of our college courses on Shakespeare here at AC. And so he's had this long and dynamic and distinguished career. And that career came to a screeching halt on Friday. This is from the Associated Press. It says, British historian and TV presenter David Starkey relinquished his honorary fellowship at the University of Cambridge College Friday after he drew outrage for his comments about black people and whether slavery should be considered genocide. Now, there's a lot of commentators in the United States and Britain that are calling slavery genocide. It was the white man's attempt to actually exterminate a race of people. This was the comment that he made. Starkey said in an interview for a YouTube show posted online Tuesday, and I guess it came out Thursday, and then again by Friday, he's done, basically. This was his quote. Slavery was not genocide. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many blacks in Africa or in Britain, would there? Now, before blacks, he inserted the D word, D-A-M-N. So it was a pretty crude and I'm sure offensive remark to a lot of people. But that one statement, you consider the large body of work. And then even the point he makes about the difference between slavery and genocide seems to me a valid point to make. We're certainly not supporting the way that he worded his statement, but there's not even any time for him to come out and apologize and I guess go back to work. He's just got to be blotted out. He made an offensive remark, and so he needs to be canceled. You look into some of his history, his background, growing up, overcoming some considerable odds, he was not a member of the upper class, and yet he got a scholarship to Cambridge. He had a lot of severe health problems as a child. He overcame that, and he became a very distinguished scholar. Now, he's had a history of making some controversial remarks. He's pretty outspoken. He's a conservative homosexual. Maybe his sexual orientation has shielded him from some of the worst of the criticism. But over the years, He's made some controversial remarks. He said following the London riots in 2011 that the white youth had taken on black gangster culture. A lot of people didn't like that. Why are you singling out the black gangster culture? All these historians came forward. They wrote a letter criticizing him. They all signed it. They wanted him to get kicked off TV. Ed Miliband at the time said he was a racist. That was in 2011. The next year, speaking about the Rotherham grooming scandal, the Pakistanis, all the raping that was going on, these little British girls, basically, he spoke out against it. And he said that these Pakistanis were bringing the values from the Punjab or from Pakistan, their religion. They were bringing those values into the UK. A clash of cultures. But you're not supposed to criticize Pakistani people or their culture. It's just the British culture that's to be denounced. He criticized the Pakistani culture in this case, and of course, there were more calls to cancel him then, 2012, 2015. He made a remark about how that nothing significant had been written in Arabic in 500 years. Well, that's not nice to say. And here again, more condemnation, more people calling on him to step down from his various posts. This AP article from last week, it says the head of Fitzwilliam College at Cambridge contacted the historian following his remarks on the YouTube channel. Starkey resigned from his position with immediate effect Friday. Fitzwilliam College issued a statement saying that although Starkey did not hold a teaching position, honorary fellows have the same responsibility as all college members to uphold its values. It says Fitzwilliam prides itself in leading the way in Cambridge in opening access to higher education for underrepresented groups. Our student and academic bodies are diverse and welcoming to all. We do not tolerate racism. So the message coming from Cambridge is clear. What he said is racist. To draw a distinction that way between slavery and genocide, it's racist. So he needs to step down. It says others associated with the historian swiftly distanced themselves from him. His publisher, HarperCollins, said it would not publish future books by Starkey and that people in the company unreservedly condemn the abhorrent remarks he made in the interview. And again, the remarks were abhorrent, I suppose, although you can't necessarily get into his mind. Was he damning black people as a race? Or the ignorance of people that would equate slavery with genocide. There is a difference, after all. In any event, it says here, Canterbury Christ Church University also terminated Starkey's role as visiting professor. It says in the interview, Starkey also said that an honest teaching, listen to this. This is in the same interview last week. He said an honest teaching of the British Empire would characterize the territories Britain claimed as colonies and protectorates as, quote, the first key stage of our globalization. It's probably the most important moment in human history, and it's still with us. I mean, this is something to celebrate. We celebrate globalism, free trade, nation, the community of nations. He's saying it traces its origins back to the British colonies. Now, that's a bad thing today. You go into modern education today and the colonies, it's just all about plunder and slavery and genocide. Here's this man. He's produced 20 books, and he was writing one for HarperCollins at the moment that this scandal broke last week. That's gone. What about the impressive body of work? One statement. How'd you like to be held to that standard? You make one misstatement. You make one offensive remark and you're gone. Your career is over. Well, he's been quite critical over the years of the way that history is taught in Britain today, in British schools. again, his book, Crown and Country. Richard was telling me the other day how he feels like that's probably the best one-volume history of Britain that's out there. That's why we use it. It's a good summary. He focuses in on the individuals, the monarchy, the people, the biographies, the mini biographies. So many modern historians, they just want to talk about events as if great individuals of history had nothing to do with the events. But you know what? You know what made this man an especially choice target for the devil? He held a positive view of British history. He was proud of Britain's culture, of Britain's heritage. He was proud of the empire's greatness, the empire's glory. He saw something magnificent in the British Empire. He obviously he saw the flaws of Henry VIII and Oliver Cromwell. But he also saw something magnificent. Just like Churchill before him, Starkey believed that Britain's culture was, in fact, superior to many other cultures. And he made no apologies for that. He was one who really exalted the crucial role that the monarchy played in Britain's greatness as an empire. This is from an article we had at the Trumpet years ago. And we're quoting from David Starkey here, who wrote, "After the sacking of Rome in AD 410, Britain and most of Western Europe were overrun by Germanic-speaking barbarians. Yet still the Britons remained different. In Europe, life after the fall of Rome was essentially the same as before. People lived in the same towns and cities, worshipped under the same bishops, served the same lords, and spoke the same language. All that changed was the remote figure at the top of the empire, so it was pretty much the same. The Germanic invaders divided and localized the Roman rule, but they kept all the wealth, pomp, and authority that they could." That's quoting David Starkey. And he says here, "In Britannia, it was a different story. Here, the fall of Rome marked the end of Romanness." Why was it different in Britain? Why is this important? Well, if you're a student of Bible prophecy, you can understand the importance here of this history. He says further on, David Starkey does, "Most importantly, perhaps they would invent a new politics." This is speaking of the British Empire and the monarchy that would soon develop from Britain. Well, I say soon. It was actually centuries later, but God was laying the groundwork. After the fall of Rome, Britain lost its Romanness, as he said. He says, "Most importantly, perhaps they would invent a new politics," Britain that is, "which depended on participation and consent rather than on top-down autocracy of Rome." Starkey says, "It's a story to be proud of, and at its heart lies a single institution, the monarchy." You can see why. Here's a historian who's proud of the British Empire and the British monarchy. And this is the history. This is the history, as we've been covering on this program, that Satan the devil wants to blot out. And so here's another victory, a small victory for the devil, as he blots out this historian after making that, using that coarse language and making the crude remark. His career is over. One misstatement. Listen to this remark from MSNBC over the weekend. They're commenting on President Trump, his July 4th message at Mount Rushmore, and then listen to the remarks about those who support Donald Trump right at the end of this clip. This is number 29.
"And so here we are, celebrating the birth of a nation, independence for white men, at a site described by one Native American activist as, quote, a symbol of white supremacy. Trump choosing Mount Rushmore for a 4th of July campaign stop is just like when he chose Tulsa, the site of the 1921 massacre against black Americans, for his Juneteenth weekend rally. It's that cruel, tired, and familiar jab to black, brown, and indigenous people that makes the shrinking MAGA voter feel as big as a 60-foot face of a colonizing slave owner.
Wow, comparing Trump voters to colonizing slave owners. If you vote for Donald Trump, well, you're just like the slave owners. I guess that remark didn't really generate any kind of criticism. I don't think that woman got fired. It only works in the other direction. If you're conservative, if you're traditional, if you really value that history, if you really see it in a positive light, not that you just gloss over the problems, the weaknesses, the sins, but if you take a more positive view, you need to be erased. You need to be canceled. Meanwhile, commentators like that can get up there and say anything they want. You're just a slave owner if you vote for Donald Trump. And she's probably going to be promoted for pushing that kind of propaganda. Al Sharpton on the TV over the weekend, same network, he said that Donald Trump is on the side of white supremacy. All of a sudden, July 4th, this is for white supremacists. It's just freedom for the white man. So along comes Donald Trump, and he carefully stages this, well, this remarkable view of Air Force One landing in or flying over Mount Rushmore on Friday afternoon. And then he's there delivering a powerful speech on Friday evening. Here's President Trump from Friday night, clip 6.
I am here as your president to proclaim before the country and before the world, this monument will never be desecrated. These heroes will never be defaced. Their legacy will never, ever be destroyed. Their achievements will never be forgotten. And Mount Rushmore will stand forever as an eternal tribute to our forefathers and to our freedom.
That's President Trump doing what just about every president, I think, you could probably say ever since Rushmore was constructed, every president has praised it. Bernie Sanders was there 4 years ago, and he said viewing the monument made him proud to be an American. That was 4 years ago. And now I guess it's a monument celebrating slavery. Because, well, two of them were slave owners. And so that's the lens that we view everything through now. All history is viewed through that lens, and that lens alone. Here's a bit more from President Trump's speech, clip 7.
We gather tonight to herald the most important day in the history of nations, July 4th, 1776. At those words, every American heart should swell with pride. Every American family should cheer with delight, and every American patriot should be filled with joy, because each of you lives in the most magnificent country in the history of the world, and it will soon be greater than ever before.
That's President Trump, his July 3rd speech. I think the graphic there on the video says July 4, but he gave it Friday night at Mount Rushmore, and I think a lot of Americans do cheer with delight. I don't think I've ever seen the kind of fireworks display that we saw Saturday night here, just around Logan County. It's legal to set off fireworks in this county. But there's quite a few counties across the U.S. where it's illegal to fire off those fireworks, and a lot of people were still doing it. You might have seen the aerials from California They probably have some of the strictest laws against blowing up things in the sky, and a lot of people were doing it. A lot of people were cheering. They were selling out fireworks across the nation. All of them gone. I went to a stand yesterday because we had a display last night. And all the big stuff, it was sold out. So I had to go to a big fireworks warehouse. Jake's Fireworks. Right here in Logan County. Now, they had some stock left. A lot of Americans. Every heart should swell with pride. He said this was the most important day in the history of nations. Well, why is it President Trump coming along and giving us a history lesson that had you given this 3, 4, 5 years ago, everybody would have agreed? Now it's controversial. Now it's racist. Now he's celebrating white supremacy. In fact, he was reminding us of some of the history that schools today refuse to teach. That's the truth. Here's clip 8.
It was all made possible by the courage of 56 patriots who gathered in Philadelphia 244 years ago and signed the Declaration of Independence. They enshrined a divine truth that changed the world forever when they said, "All men are created equal." These immortal words set in motion the unstoppable march of freedom. Our founders boldly declared that we are all endowed with the same divine rights given us by our Creator in heaven, and that which God has given us, we will allow no one ever to take away, ever.
That's President Trump from Friday night. It's a pretty positive view of history. The divine truth, as he said there, that all men are created equal. And those immortal words, penned by Thomas Jefferson, by the way, they set in motion the unstoppable march of freedom. The freest, most prosperous nation in the history of the world. Now, that's a pretty positive view. But the radical left, they don't like a positive view of history when it comes to the United States or Britain. Now, if it's coming from Pakistan, it's all positive. If there's gang raping going on, just cover that up. Don't even report that. You cannot criticize that culture. There's a real spirit world. There's a devil that's behind this movement to blot out Israel. Look at the reaction of the media here in the U.S. Just disgraceful. Here he's giving us a history lesson when the historian should be giving it to us. Breaking news, says the New York Times. President Trump delivered a dark and divisive speech at Mount Rushmore, leaning into the culture wars and barely mentioning the pandemic. Now they're concerned about the pandemic. Okay. Now that the rioting has subsided, we're back to the pandemic. The mortality rate just continues to plummet. I think there were 250 deaths yesterday across the nation. We have 50 states. I think that amounts to 5 per state if you were to average it out. Second wave. He barely mentioned the pandemic. They didn't mention it at all when Antifa and Black Lives Matter were burning our cities. ABC, President Donald Trump pushes racial division, flouts virus rules at the foot of Mount Rushmore. It's like they all sit in the same echo chamber and they just write the title a little bit differently. But it's the same talking points. The LA Times, at Mount Rushmore, Trump uses 4th of July celebration to stoke a culture war. Washington Post, at Mount Rushmore, Trump exploits social divisions, warns of left-wing cultural revolution. in a dark speech ahead of Independence Day. It was a dark speech. He's there celebrating American history at Mount Rushmore, of all places. This is that clip from CNN 4 years ago. And it's not just Bernie Sanders' reaction. He's at Mount Rushmore. Listen to the tone and the coverage of CNN at that time. Clip six.
This is our country at its very best. What an incredible achievement.
Visiting Mount Rushmore today, Bernie Sanders taking in the majesty of the moment, this monument to four great American presidents.
Just the accomplishment and the beauty here, it really does make one very proud to be an American.
Very proud to be an American? In front of those four great presidents, said CNN. Today, well, the coverage is nothing. Nothing like that. Listen to this from CNN just a couple days ago, clip one.
Kicking off the Independence Day weekend, President Trump will be at Mount Rushmore, where he'll be standing in front of a monument of two slave owners and on land wrestled away from Native Americans, told that be focusing on the effort to, quote, tear down our country's history.
This is CNN. Standing in front of a monument of two slave owners and on land wrestled away from Native Americans. That's the lens through which we view all history now. No exceptions. Here's a sampling from NBC, clip two.
When you look at the rally that happened in Tulsa around Juneteenth, you look at this rally, Andrea, there's a question here as to whether the administration is blind to the history that this country is now re-looking at, re-examining in this moment of social awakening, or if they simply don't care.
Right. Are they just blind or they don't care, this administration? You know, Barack Obama visited Mount Rushmore. Hillary Clinton did. Bernie Sanders, you just saw that. They celebrated the history not that long ago, just a few years ago. What does it tell you about Satan being cast down? And the rage and the hatred for Israel. And the effort to blot it out. This is from, I think, MSNBC on Saturday, clip five.
Donald Trump chose the most grandiose symbol of U.S. imperialism on earth to usher in a very on-brand star-spangled spectacle. Complete with fireworks and military flyovers, it was Trump's predictable way of throwing red meat to his base. The cult-like following he so desperately needs at the ballot box as he tanks in the polls. But let's talk some truth here. Mount Rushmore isn't exactly the innocent ode to our founding fathers as described in our textbooks. And it's high time we disrupt that false narrative that far too many people believe.
It's not enough that we're going to do this in sacred lands of Lakota people and a place that has been marked by, you know, it's been polluted. It's been desecrated by putting these slave-owning, racist, horrible, horrible white men in 60-foot statues on this wall. His spectacle, yeah, it's kind of what we expect from Donald Trump. It's a clown show, and, you know, hopefully we send this clown back to the circus so maybe he can get eaten by a lion.
Nothing controversial there. I guess that's probably going to advance his career. Poor David Starkey. One comment. He's gone. This guy's talking about the clown being thrown into the arena to be eaten by the lions. And then in referring to those four presidents, slave-owning, racist, horrible, horrible white men. Just a sampling from the radical left's response to a history speech. A history speech by a president of the United States at Mount Rushmore. The New York Times, it wrote Saturday morning, standing in a packed amphitheater in front of Mount Rushmore for an Independence Day celebration, President Trump delivered a dark and divisive speech on Friday that cast his struggling effort to win a second term as a battle against a new far-left fascism seeking to wipe out the nation's values and history. Well, that's what they're doing. Literally, they're out on the streets trying to wipe it out. The New York Times says, with the coronavirus pandemic raging and his campaign faltering in the polls, his appearance amounted to a fiery reboot of his reelection. So it's all political. It's all political. Here, these thugs are threatening to take down all the monuments. And so the president of the United States goes to perhaps the most iconic one of all and says, it's not going to happen here. The New York Times says this, most presidents in history have understood that when they appear at a national monument, it's usually a moment to act as a unifying chief of state, not a partisan divider. Really now? But some of these monuments, a lot of these monuments, are being destroyed. And they're being destroyed by people who want to divide and conquer this nation. Well, I could go on and on. That's the New York Times' take. And then there's, of course, the Washington Post was really no different. You heard some of the video clips there. Let me just see if I can get a couple of highlights from the Post. This is by Elizabeth Kolsky. It's time to reconsider the global legacy of July 4th, 1776. This is where we are. It all started, remember, with justice for George. There's police brutality, and it needs to be dealt with. We need fairness. We need justice. Now we're reconsidering the legacy of July 4th. That's Washington Post. That's not the Huffington Post. That's the Washington Post. This is the New York Times. Elizabeth Kolsky, by the way. I think she went to school at Columbia, named after Columbus, by the way. Should that be canceled? Should we cancel Columbia? This is the institution that so many of the journalists of today graduate from. This is like Howard Zinn University. They come out of that university hating, absolutely hating and despising the United States of America, despising the history, the institutions, the founding of America. Self-loathing, self-hatred from the Washington Post here. Well, basically, it's everything is viewed through the lens of race. White violence against Indians was pervasive and unchecked by British justice, says this journalist, this historian. I think she teaches at Princeton, so a lot of young people are now sitting in her classes. It says Britain's settler colonies in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and Africa caused the violent dispossession of indigenous peoples and frequently justified the idea of black extermination. Black extermination. That's what was going on with the British Empire, with colonialism, says the Washington Post. Now, David Starkey comes along and says, look, there's a difference between slavery. It did happen. It was worldwide, in fact. There's a difference, though, between slavery and genocide. And if the extermination happened, then why are there so many densely populated regions in the world filled with black people? Africa, England, the United States, it's, I think, 13%. But to make that distinction, to even make that point, it puts you in danger. It puts you in danger of being canceled. This is how strong and hateful that movement is coming from the radical left. Here's a little bit more from President Trump's speech Friday night. This is clip 9.
As we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure. Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. Angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Many of these people have no idea why they're doing this, but some know exactly what they are doing. They think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them.
It really was a wartime speech. And as I say, the New York Times sees it as divisive. But who's causing the division? Who's destroying the history? Who's trying to wipe out the history? Who's trying to defame the heroes? Who's trying to erase the values? Who's indoctrinating children? This is a wartime speech from an American president who knows he's fighting for the survival of the country. The country as we know it. Its very survival is hanging by a thread. What did God say in 2 Kings 14? And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam. This nation, this great nation, is in danger of being blotted out. But not for God. And this Jeroboam figure, my father's made the point in Great Again and elsewhere, where would we be today? He's facing an enemy, this president, he's facing an enemy that absolutely despises everything that America stands for. And he knows the goal of the radical left is to blot it out. How amazing is it that here we've been talking about blotted out for over a year, I think. And all of a sudden, now the lingo is cancel culture. They want to cancel it. In other words, blot it out. Tomorrow's news today, that's the trumpet. Here's another clip from Friday night, clip 10.
One of their political weapons is cancel culture, driving people from their jobs, shaming dissenters, and demanding total submission from anyone who disagrees. This is the very definition of totalitarianism, and it is completely alien to our culture and to our values, and it has absolutely no place in the United States of America.
See, he knows that the aim here from the other side is to blot out the United States. It's the very definition of totalitarianism. Who speaks like this? Who has the courage to stand up to the radical left this way? He's up there speaking the truth. And he was doing it years ago when people like Colin Kaepernick were taking a knee at the national anthem. Kaepernick tweeted out on Saturday, this is the July 4th tweet from Colin Kaepernick. We reject your celebration of white supremacy. Remember those who defended him a few years ago, saying, look, he's not protesting the country. He's just protesting police brutality. Now he tweets out on July 4th of all days, we're not celebrating white supremacy. And then all the commentators, they run with that on MSNBC and CNN. The Washington Post says it's time to reevaluate the legacy of the July 4th holiday. What a dramatic change. Just in a matter of months, just a few short years. One last clip here from President Trump's address Friday night, clip 11.
In our schools, our newsrooms, even our corporate boardrooms, there is a new far-left fascism that demands absolute allegiance. If you do not speak its language, perform its rituals, recite its mantras, and follow its commandments, then you will be censored, banished, blacklisted, persecuted, and punished. It's not going to happen to us.
It's not going to happen to us. He knows he's in the battle for the country. He knows he's in a war for the country and its founding institutions. Here again, just to view this, not through the lens of race, but through the lens of Bible prophecy. 2 Kings 14, verses 26 and 27. Read it again on your own time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.